Good morning, everybody. I'm happy to see all the people that come out in the mornings, just as has been mentioned. It's going beyond the call of duty, you might say, but it shows a good priority in your mind. Some names go together, and we can start it off secularly. Romeo and Cleopatra, that might not be quite as famous. In the Bible, you have some, and some of them aren't very good. Samson and Delilah. Ahab, this is the worst one maybe, Ahab and Jezebel, and sometimes they're good. Adam and Eve and Joseph and Mary. And you know where I'm going this, if you've looked at the title, I want to talk, of course, about Aquila and Priscilla. In New Jersey, they say Aquila and Priscilla. And do you have an idea? But if it's changed around, I'm Gadna. And my daughters are Lear and Rebecca, but I'm Gadna. Anyway, that's parts of New Jersey. Okay, what I want to do is look at all the New Testament texts that talk about Aquila and Priscilla. And it really helps us learn a lot about the role of women. We've been talking about a little bit as we've kind of had a broad theme of postmodernism, but also just how to live. That's what's important for all of us. So to start off with, I want to talk about the Apostle Paul when we first met them. The Apostle Paul is going through a rough time on his second missionary journey. He goes to Philippi, where he's beaten and thrown in jail. He goes to Thessalonica and Berea, where he's run out of town. He goes to Athens, where they made fun of him. And he had to send his companion back to Macedonia. Evidently, he was so concerned with those new Christians in Thessalonica. Timothy, you go back and check them out. I'll just go on my own. So he goes by himself down to Corinth. And as you see, Corinth's on the isthmus between the northern part of Greece and the southern part, Peloponnesian Peninsula. I forgot my ninth grade geography a little bit. But you can see, I love this picture because you can see the isthmus, the one branch of the sea on the left and another branch of the Aegean Sea on the right. And you can see why Corinth would have had a prominent place in maritime shipping, because you could save time just running your cargo over that little isthmus to the other side. And that's, of course, where Corinth became built up. Today, there's a canal. You don't have to drag your cargo with mules. There's a canal today. But we're not here to talk about Corinth. We're here to talk about Aquila and Priscilla. But when Paul arrives there in Corinth, I think that's probably Corinth, that white area of the ruins up in the top left. He was in a desperate situation. He says in 1 Thessalonians 3:17, I was in much affliction and distress by himself, coming to a place he did not know. Sometimes when I talk about this in Spanish, some of the Spanish brethren who arrive from other countries arrive in New York City without knowing very many people. Usually they know a few, or New Jersey or Florida, wherever. But to imagine to arrive in a large city and you don't know anyone hardly. Sometimes when we think of Paul, we think of kind of a robot. You push the button and he preaches the gospel. Emotional ups and downs as well. And yet God always managed to work him through those situations. And it seemed like here in Corinth, one of the ways he helped him work through this was by providing him some good companions. And I'm talking of Priscilla and Aquila. So let's start reading Acts 18. And I don't have this on the screen, but I'm sure you all have your Bibles. 1 through 3. Acts 18, 1 through 3. Anybody would like to volunteer? Go right ahead. Go ahead, Jack.
After these things, he left Athens and went to Corinth. And he found a certain Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, having recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all Jews to leave Rome. He came to them, and because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them, and they were working.
Okay. Sometimes in our lives when we find ourselves most desperate, That's when God provides us through the influence of His words in another way. He provides us with friends who are going to be great blessings to us through the rest of our lives. So we have Aquila and Priscilla, and we don't know a lot about them. What little we know is there in verse 2. We don't even know if they were Christians when Paul met them, although it looks kind of like they would have been. Aquila's from Pontus. That's the northern part of what we call Turkey today. We're not even sure that Priscilla was a Jew because it mentioned that Aquila was a Jew. Doesn't say anything about Priscilla. We're not sure of that. The text said they had to leave Rome because of an edict of the Emperor Claudius. Suetonius said, since the Jews constantly made disturbances at the instigation of Crestus, he expelled them from Rome. And what would grab your attention in that quote?
Crestus.
Now, you can find all kinds of articles. That was Christ. And some people say that was not Christ. We know that it happened later. Problems. Although, to me, it looks like when Paul got to Rome in Acts chapter 28, that he wasn't received with too much antagonism by the Jews. They were more willing to listen to him. And this is before that, of course. So I'm not sure if that was a reference to Christ or not there. But we're talking here about the year 49 AD, when that would have happened. So Aquila and Priscilla are not in Rome. They decide to go to Corinth. And all through the rest of this study, you're going to see they had a little axis of travel. Rome, Corinth, Ephesus, Corinth, Rome. They're going to be one of these three places. And of course, those are three areas that Paul were very important to Paul. So they were with him the rest of his life. They helped him start this congregation in Corinth. And in all of his battles, they constantly supported him. They consoled him. They worked with him. And Paul makes a pretty strong straight statement about how much they did that we're going to look at later in our study. So, when Paul gets through preaching in Corinth, not being persecuted by the Jews there, I think later on he's more persecuted by the weakness of the members. But they go with him. Would somebody like to read 18 and 19, please? 18 and 19. Sure.
Paul, having remained many days longer, took leave of the brethren and put out to sea for Syria. And with him were Priscilla and Aquila. In Caesarea he had his hair cut, for he was keeping a vow.
And you can go and read 18 if you want to. Or 19, I'm sorry.
They came to Ephesus and he left them there. Now he himself entered the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews.
So they went with Paul through Cenchrea to Ephesus. I'm not going to mention this much, but Paul had kept the vow. Some people say, how is he doing that? Wasn't he free of the law? But there are a number of texts that indicate that Jewish Christians, even after Christ died on the cross, kept their Jewish traditions as long as they could. And of course, that ended at the destruction of Jerusalem. You couldn't do the sacrifices involved in the keeping of the law after that. But Paul, being a Jew, kept his Jewish customs as customs, not as laws and regulations from God. But that's not the main point of the lesson here. The main point is to show how Priscilla and Aquila are becoming close to Paul. Here's the importance of seeking out people in our life that are going to help us go to heaven. And of course, this is something I hammer and hammer and hammer again with the young people that we work with. And I'm going to use one of them as here and be thinking as I'm talking of this example, some examples that you might have that would be similar. This little fellow on the left is Roger Polanco. Some of you have mentioned that you've met Roger. He's a kind of a hyper, go-get-em type of guy. When I met Roger, he had zero interest in the Bible. I was trying to study with his mother, and this little 12-year-old kid comes in. Would you like to read with us? Leave me alone. But eventually, he would come to services, and I noticed him listening a little bit. And every once in a while, you get a question, usually based on how can you really believe this stuff. But the good thing, he would listen to the answer. Sometimes people ask you, how can you believe this stuff? And then when you give the answer, they're not listening. But he would listen. And he got together, and I will mention this, at camp with Jesse Bartley, who you all know. And if you know Jesse, you know he never gets tired of talking. I think they must have talked 2 or 3 or 4 hours. Be baptized. So there at the camp, he was baptized. But right after that, it was time to go to college. And well, he'd been to this camp. I'm going to go to Florida College. So he went down there. And he says later, I got in with the wrong crowd. Got in pretty soon with the wrong crowd. And he said, I know I shouldn't be doing this, but those were the type of people who had lived like he lived in high school. And somebody said, you need to hang out with this guy. And that's a Hoosier. And you, some of you said have told me you know Caleb. But he was always studying the Bible. And so Roger kind of saw him. Caleb saw him hanging around. And he said, hey, let's study the Bible. Okay, well, when? We do about 6 tomorrow morning. When? 6? Well, he did. And he found he liked the scriptures. He started hanging out with the people that Caleb hanged out with. Would they be hanged out or hung out with? I guess hung out with. And he found what he needed in life. But the key were probably 2 good companions. The first would have been Jesse, and the second would have been Caleb. That changed his life for the better. If he'd stayed with the first crowd that he was with, life would have been so different. He found the right ones. So most of us here are a little bit older. We've already found our friends and lives, but I guess an application we can make for ourselves is with our young people and with our children, let's emphasize the impulse to people that will help us go to heaven. That's why it's so important to help young men and young women to be leaders and influential so that others can learn from them. Anybody else have any stories like that they'd like to tell? Fire away. That illustrate the point of the importance of attaching ourselves to good people. If you can't think of one, that's fine. Okay. I know you've got some, but anyway, you don't have to tell me. If you run across somebody who likes to pray, be with them. Now, here's something, and I guess this is something we deal with the young people a lot as well. This works negatively as well. If you run across someone that is going to keep you from praying or look at you a little funny if you talk about reading the Bible, get away from them. And especially, I think this is too late for all of us here as I'm looking around, but especially true if you're talking about a boyfriend or a girlfriend. If you realize that someone is not going to let you go to heaven, get away from them. Drop them like a hot potato. Growing up, he would say, marry somebody that's going to help you go to heaven. And he said this, if during this very wedding ceremony, you're thinking, and you're thinking, I don't know if this person's going to help me go to heaven or not. And if the preacher says, do you take this woman to be your lawfully wedded wife? It's still not too late. If you don't think she's going to help you go to heaven, just say no. And I remember from that time on going to a number of weddings and getting that big point, will anybody say no? I wonder if that's ever happened. I don't know. But his point was this point. It's never too late until you say I do to say I don't. But make sure that whoever you're running around with helps you go to heaven. Okay. Shall we leave that point? We have a short class today, but that's all right. Never heard anybody complain about that. Okay, let's go to Acts 18. Acts 18, 24 to 28. Acts 18, 24 to 28. Anybody like to help read that? Sure.
Those who
Okay, here we're introduced to Apollos. What are some interesting things about Apollos? Where was he from?
Alexandria.
Anybody know anything about Alexandria you like from your ancient history? Yes. That's what it was mainly known for. Also, you have one of the seven wonders of the world there. I think one of the lighthouses there. But it was a cultural center. And to be from Alexandria, people would expect something from you. Jerry Falk, who's a good friend of mine, and I tell him he's an exception to this rule, but Jerry Falk is from Princeton, New Jersey. And I tease him about that a little bit, but he said, that's the best house I could find, and it wasn't in the highfalutin part of Princeton, New Jersey. But usually if you hear, he's from Princeton. He's from Harvard. I was quoting some fellow the other day that I found this on Google, but it was in the Harvard Theological Review, and I thought, that's kind of out of my league. And as I quote him, I said, I'm not on their mailing list. But anyway, if you're on the mailing list of someone from Harvard or Princeton, that's like saying this guy's got a little bit of an advantage in the world. Well, Apollos was from Alexandria. And what else does it say about him? What kind of man was he? Now, don't say like a brother that I know, a very good brother down in Estill County, Kentucky. Don't say an elephant man. He was an eloquent man. He was powerful in his speaking and preaching. But all those things are good, Alexandrian, eloquent man. Well, what's really good about him, according to the verse?
Mighty
in the Scriptures. He knew how to use them, and you can get that as well from verse 28. So he had access. Were the Scriptures easily accessed in the first century? Did everybody have a copy of the Scriptures in their house? If they did, they were very rich. In Alexandria, to find a number of copies there, because everything was written by hand. But he was powerful in them, yes.
I think sometimes some individuals think that he was, you know, mighty in the Gospels, in the letters, and those weren't there.
No.
We're talking about the law and the prophets. And
that's it.
What he knows, the same as Paul. And they knew those things and knew how to bring Jesus out of that. And sometimes we forget how much we can learn about Jesus in the whole law.
You're right. We quote a lot of verses about the importance of the Scriptures, and most of them have to do primarily with the Old Testament. Although we do know from 2 Peter that early Christians also considered the writings of inspired apostles as Scripture as well. But you're right. They didn't have them. They had very few of them in written form. At this time, probably none. Okay. Something else. Sometimes you could get up a good sermon on this. He's fervent in spirit. That's a good combination. Knowledge, fervency in spirit, and we're going to see something else about him. He had been instructed in the way of the Lord, but as we keep on reading, had he been instructed perfectly in the way of the Lord? What was lacking? Only the baptism of John. I wonder sometimes how that would have occurred. How could you instruct someone in the Lord without getting the Lord's baptism involved? But somehow or another it happened. And so we run across people like that today who've been instructed partially, and they need to follow Aquila's example. And that's they need to follow, Aquila's example, and also Apollos, that's who we're talking about, his example as well. So you can imagine Priscilla and Aquila. They're going to the synagogue, and up steps this man. He kind of an eloquent man will sometimes grab your attention. He's going to say something important. And he starts speaking, and he says, look at these prophets. They're talking about Jesus of Nazareth. And you imagine Aquila. He's on our side. He's with us. You know, so they're real excited. And as they're listening, oh, it's good, it's good, but... Uh-oh. What's John's baptism have to do with Christ? There's got to be something done here. What did they do? What did they do according to verse 26?
He
that we could put that 26A like I did with Deborah the other day.
They took him aside.
And they didn't challenge him publicly. What ignorance. How can you learn part? And of course, there are all kinds of scriptures that come to mind. The Lord's bondservant must not be quarrelsome, but be kind to all, skillful in teaching, patient when wrong, with gentleness correcting those who are in opposition, if perhaps God may grant them repentance leading to the knowledge of the truth. That's 1 Timothy 2, 24 and 25, of course. And we've all known problems that have been caused by brethren who will respond sarcastically to those who haven't quite come to full knowledge of Christ's way, calling them down publicly, which tactics aren't called for. Now, there are times when there needs to be public rebuke, and I think that's when someone who's highly respected is about to lead a number of people astray. Paul and Peter, for example, in Galatians chapter 2. But that's an exception to the rule. Generally, 1 Timothy 2:24, the example of Priscilla and Aquila, that's what we need today. Now, this reflects well on Apollos. Where was Apollos from? It almost seems like that's mentioned to point out that he's up there. And eloquent, he's got that training for communication. He's mighty in the scriptures. Who were Priscilla and Aquila? Now, we're not sure that this means that they were... Paul was a tent maker and he was a rabbi practically, not qualified, at least hated in them of themselves. At the same time, it's probably not too speculative to state that probably Apollos was a little higher level academically than Priscilla and Aquila. And yet, how does he receive their teaching? Well, one thing, look closely at verse 26. I doubt you can get this without a hint, but you may. Do you see anything a little different from what we usually see when talking about pairs of people in the scriptures there in 26? Something's...
Reverse the names.
Yeah, whose name comes first? You got it with the hardly a hint at all. Priscilla's name comes first. A woman's name comes first. Now, why is that? You can find all kinds of articles online about why is it Priscilla and Aquila more than it is Aquila and Priscilla. And we may talk about that a little more later. But maybe she took the lead in talking with Apollos. And we talked the other day about those unwilling to take advice from a woman. That's not Apollos. He's willing to accept it. Have you ever known anyone who's too proud to take correction? Like this term, they double down on their error rather than accept correction. That's not Apollos. He's willing to receive correction. When I was thinking about this, I was thinking about a story from Africa, from Zimbabwe. Back then, it was Rhodesia. And Rhodesia was governed by a very small minority of Europeans. And the Africans there were kind of considered second-class citizens. There was an Englishman named Neville, and I got the story, a brother named Foy Short, who's kind of one of my heroes, but he told me this story about this Englishman named Neville, who was foreman, supervisor of constructing railroads, and he had a number of Africans working under him, and sometimes he'd go around where they were, and a young African man, I got a picture of him up here. I had a picture. Okay. This one said Aquila and Priscilla Short. So that means I took the picture out, I guess. Anyway, handsome young man. I'll show him a picture of you sometimes. But this young man was constantly talking with his companions about the Bible. Lunchtime, Bible talk. Break time, Bible talk. And this Jeffrey Nyembezi was always taking the lead. Well, Neville just sat down and listened one time, and he was amazed at that young African's knowledge of the scripture. And he took a step that Brother Short tells me never occurred in that society. He invited Nyembezi to come to his house to teach him the Bible and his wife the Bible. Short said that was unheard of, that he might have gotten in trouble if they'd found out about it. And it was almost all night talking, and Neville obeyed the gospel. He allowed himself to be taught by someone whose culture at that time considered to be an inferior, but Neville wanted to know the truth, and his wife wanted the truth, did not take into consideration those cultural norms. I like that story. That's Apollos, and I may be speculating a little bit that he would have been considered superior, and that's academically, to Priscilla and Aquila. But the point is, we should not be too proud to accept correction from those around about us. I remember one time going to, what I do a lot, I did a lot of this several years ago, send out correspondence courses all over the place, and I would go visit with the people and try to have Bible studies with them. I remember one guy I came to visit, give them their certificate, would you like to continue studying? He pointed up to his certificate on the wall. It said, graduate of such and such institute. I don't know how much he thought my little seven-lesson Bible, Jesus the Way Bible Correspondence Course certificate would look next to it. But his attitude is, what are you going to teach me? Look what I have there. And some of the highly educated people I know, academically speaking, the good ones are willing to listen to any sermon from anybody, and they can get something out of it. What was the result of this? Apollos became a powerful tool, and Paul respected him, and how much the Corinthians respected him. There might have been no Apollos if it hadn't been for Priscilla and Aquila. Anybody else that like to have anything think that line? If you have a similar story, fire away with it. I should have told you to be thinking of these illustrations before today, because I can't ever think of anything on the spur of a moment. Yes, Jack. That's really the way God plans to be, isn't it? That we are taught, and we find other opportunities to teach. We look for our friends. I did a video with my dad last week. Dad came up, and he said, can you find a field full of sunflowers? Well, we looked around. I said, it has to be in a public place. We found one. We found just sunflowers everywhere. So we did it right in the middle of it. And his point was, did somebody go and personally plant every one of these sunflower seeds? No. First place, you don't want sunflowers usually on your lawn. But in the second place, it would just require too much labor to personally plant every little dandelion. Anyway, I never know what I'm saying. Dandelion seed all around that area. So how did those dandelion get there? Just one came from who knows where, what field, how far away in the wind, stuck there. And all of a sudden, the seed began to be scattered, and little kids went around and blew the seed out. Much of what we're seeing here, it starts with little pinpricks, but it grows and expands. That's the parable of the leaven, really, that Jesus taught about. Kingdom is like that. It expands. Okay. Let's go and look at 1 Corinthians 16:19. Paul is in Ephesus, and he's writing to the Corinthians. And verse 19, I'll just read it. The churches of Asia greet you. Aquila and Prisca greet you heartily in the Lord with the church that is in their house. That's one of the few places where Aquila's name comes first. If I remember correctly, the names are found seven times in the scriptures. Five times, hers comes first. But there's no jealousy. And also, they're a team. You never see it's just Aquila or just Priscilla. Now, there have been occasions maybe when that could have been possible. But are there some people that you know that when you think of one, you just automatically think of the other? They're a team. Husbands and wives work together as a team. And that, of course, is true as far as raising children. Sometimes, and this is almost always true, it's probably been true in your marriage. Beverly always thought I was an easy pushover with our girls. And I don't think I was. But anyway, I won't defend myself now. But discuss your differences away from the children. You're a team. You don't want it to appear that one is pushing one way and one's the other. One thing I learned very early, if Beverly said to the kids something, don't do that, that's wrong, I'd say, in front of them, don't you think that's a little hard? Ooh, I learned fast that you don't do that. That's undermining authority. Your team, finances, your team. This is something that disturbs me a little bit. Not that it's a super big deal, but here's a pair talking, a husband and wife. Well, that's my money. Well, that's your money. My money and your money. Well, Beverly and I don't talk that way. It's our money. We're a team, and we look at life as a team. And I've always pointed out that her name appears first more often than not, and here again you can find a lot of articles. Why? Family connections, maybe. But it's probably that she was just a little more advanced, at least in knowledge. Do you know Christian couple where the woman is just... No, she's a little bit ahead of her husband. I'm thinking right now I can talk of people far, far away because no one will know that I'm talking about them. No one, they will not know I'm talking about them. But I know a team, they were from the Dominican Republic. And she's just a lot sharper than he was. He was a nice guy. But if you had a Bible question, you did not go to him. You went to her. And he preached. I suspect those lessons were made up by her. And I don't know if I went in. Sometimes we won't get into any preachers that are present if their wives get up their lessons for them. But I'm glad that she got his lessons up for him because she just knew how to do it, knew how to organize it, knew the scriptures. And yet, is he jealous at all? There's no bit of jealousy. He's as happy as he can be to have such a sharp wife. He doesn't look upon it as, she knows more than me and she's better. Boy, how great it is to have someone on my team who is sharp as she is. I will not ask any of you to know personally, especially around here, of someone whose wife is sharper than the husband. We could probably give too many examples and somebody might get in trouble. But that happens. I don't think there's any sign that Aquila was jealous of Priscilla. Why'd you put her name first there? Their teams. Anybody like to say anything about that? Yes.
Well, it just seems like in Acts 18, his name was first because if there was a trade involved, it was a business. And so because of commerce and stuff like that, that his name would be listed first. And then in the First Corinthians, the house was his house as the guy.
But perhaps.
The other things where they met together, it had to do with spiritual things.
Yeah, I never thought about that. That might be a possible. We're doing a little bit of speculation here, and so while we're at it, that might be a good idea.
I was looking back in Acts chapter 2, there were some people from Pontus that were at the original sermon, and then Peter later addresses Christians, Jewish Christians who were up in Pontus. So it's possible, I know there's a lot of people that Anita came with the idea of trying to come to Jesus first.
Right.
He's
kind of nudging you along a little bit there.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's possible that she did have some more knowledge about what was going on.
Could be.
He'd come to it a little later in the game. So.
That's a good possibility. I'm going to expand this a little bit. If a husband and wife like Priscilla and Aquila were a team, what are we in the church? Aren't we a team? And if we're really a team, of course, love does not envy. 1 Corinthians 13. Why is there envy in the church? Somebody says, he's the best song leader there. And somebody else who's leading singing. You get the eye. They didn't like that. She makes the best blackberry pie of anybody at church. I make blackberry pie too. You know, and you can get a little jealousy, but we're a team. And if we realize that, even you know, in athletics, if you want to have a good team, you want the best players on your team, even if they're better than you are. If you're a team player, you don't have to be the star of the team. The team wins, you find somebody that's better than you to play. So we're a team, as a husband and wife, as a church, and in every way. Okay. Romans 16. I'm going chronologically here. Romans comes before Corinthians in the Bible, but I think it comes later chronologically. This long chapter 16. I heard my dad preach a sermon on it, and he was almost about all these people in Romans 16. So Paul is probably in Corinth now, and he's writing to the church of Rome, and as my mother used to say, lo and behold, who is in Rome? Verses 3 and 4. Who would like to read verses Romans 16, 3 and 4? Sure.
Greet Prisca and Aquila, my fellow workers in Christ Jesus, who for my life risked their own necks, to whom not only do I give thanks, but also all the churches of the Gentiles.
Okay. Greet Prisca and Aquila. One little thing. Priscilla is the diminutive form, just like we say John is a name and Johnny is a diminutive form. Bill is a name. Billy is the diminutive form. So Prisca is the name. Priscilla is the kind of more familiar type of name. But here they are, Priscilla and Aquila. Greet them. And what do we see here about Priscilla and Aquila? They're fellow workers, and we've already known that. But what else do we see about them in verse 4? They risked their own necks. It's probably pretty literal persecution. The idea is they exposed their neck to the executioner for me. How did they do that? Well, if you know, please tell me, because I have no idea. That's one of the questions of about a long list we'll have when we reach, as we sometimes say, the other side. How exactly did they risk their lives for Paul? We don't know. The most common ideas is probably that they would have hid him when the authorities were chasing after him or were trying to kill him. But that's speculation. But the fact that they were willing to risk their own lives for the Apostle Paul, you can see why he appreciated them so much. If somebody risks their life for you, you have a lifelong friend, someone that you admire. But who would you risk your life for? Most I would say my wife, my kids, but a good brother in Christ, who would you risk it for? I admire people who donate their kidneys. There's some risk involved. I'm going to live with one kidney less so that I can help someone else. That's risking your life for someone else. Do we sometimes have to take risk to help and serve others? I'll give a few, and you can give some if you come up. There's social risk. If we're going to be in this, I think so many of these apply to young people, but indirectly to us as well. If you're going to be pure in your language, in your dress, and your conduct, and you go to a public school, you're going to be looked upon as a bit of an oddball. And some young Christians just aren't strong enough to be willing to risk that. So they conform. They conform to the entertainment, the clothing, and so forth. And it's hard. It's hard to be different. It's hard to be the outcast, the nerds. But as they look at it. But sometimes that means that's what it means to be a Christian. And speaking of nerds, and this is something, and I look back at my own life as a high school, I wasn't the worst, but I think of one or two of the kids that others would just persecute mercilessly. There was a young man that everybody called Termite. Well, I wasn't the worst, but I did call him Termite and did not defend him as I should. There was another young man in college who was that way a little bit. I remember a few times, I guess I'd matured a little bit. I said, back off and leave him alone. Respect him. But didn't do that in high school as much as I should, because there's a little social risk. If I defend the nerd, if I defend the outcast, I don't know, who do you think you are? But a part of serving Christ is risking our popularity, risking ourselves socially for others. There may be some things that you would do with your money that other people, why are you doing that? Because I have other priorities. So what are we willing to risk for our brethren, for others in the service of the kingdom? So I like the fact that they expose their necks to the executioner for the sake of Paul. Anyway, but I'd like to have anything to say about that? Yes, two. I think you're right. I think you're right, even more so now than 30, 40, 50 years ago.
In Bible readings recently, we was in John 15, and Jesus there speaking that last night with the apostles says, greater love has no one to lay down their life for friends. He talks about them now being his friends, and he would lay down his life. And so I think it's certainly what Priscilla and Aquila have taken on that whole idea.
That's what we do. And if we're followers of Christ, we'll have the same attitude. Very good. Okay, we'll go to the last point. And we got it in 1 Corinthians 16. And also we have it in Romans 16:5. Let's see, I've got that already. They gave their house to the church. Most early congregations evidently met in houses. Not all. There's no pattern, exclusive pattern there. But many of them met in homes. Some of you may have had a church meet in your house before. What do you have running around? All kinds of kids and kids running around and tearing this up and that up. And sometimes you have teenagers in your house and they'll tear things up and get pizza stains all over the carpet. And it's just a mess. And some people just can't take it. It's a bit of an inconvenience. But if we're not willing, that's not the right word. If we don't have, and here you don't need to have a church meet in your house. God's blessed you with this beautiful building here. But there are good things that could happen in your house for the Lord. Fill up that live Bible study, home Bible study, for lodging. Everything that we have is really God's and should be available for His service. That's the way it obviously was with Priscilla and Aquila. I'll tell a quick story about my parents. I was born in New Jersey, and Dad tells me this story about the time when I was born. There was a family in the congregation there in Westfield, New Jersey. Their name was Horner, and they loved to have people over to their house. And their house was always full of brethren. She had a stroke. She was unable to prepare for so many people. They would still try to have one or two at a time, but that was after a stroke, that was all that she could handle. One day there was a knock at the door, and Dad went there, and there was Brother Horner, and he had a big package with him. So he came in, sat down with Dad, opened up the package, and there was a big box of beautiful silverware. It had H on it. Brother Horner said, H stands for Horner. From now on, it's going to stand for Hall. We've decided if we can't use this for the Lord, why keep it when somebody else can use it for the Lord better than we can? That's the type of thing we're talking about. Everything we have is the Lord's, and if we can't use it for the Lord, let's find somebody else who can use it for the Lord. That's the spirit that we see in Priscilla and Aquila. Anybody have anything you'd like to say about that point? Some of you may have seen that silverware if you've been to Mom and Dad's with the H on it. I think there's some of it still hanging around. Anyway. Okay, the last text, 2 Timothy chapter 4. This is at the end of Paul's life, maybe between some, you try to give dates, 64 to 68. We're talking a dozen to 15 years after Paul would have met Priscilla and Aquila. The Apostle Paul is about to die. He knows the end is near. I'm being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is faith. This is probably his final letter. At least we know it's the last one that we have that he wrote, and it's to Timothy, begging Timothy, come to me before winter. Come quickly. And of course, the point is clear. If Timothy had delayed, he may have arrived in Rome, and Paul is already gone from this world. But Timothy's in Ephesus, probably. And verse 19, greet Prisca and Aquila. There they still are. Well, Paul died. Tradition says he was beheaded. And as I thought about this, I thought, what happened to Priscilla and Aquila? What would have happened to them? Did one pass away before the other? That's what usually happens today with a good team of Christians. One usually goes on before the other, and it's tough for the other one. My dad's dealing with it now. Some of you have loved ones that are dealing with it, and some of you are dealing with it. Would that have happened for them? I like to think sometimes, would they have died together? Maybe in that first wave of persecution, they were prominent Christians. And of course, the Bible doesn't say. But the more I thought about this, the more I thought, it doesn't really matter how they died. It doesn't matter so much how we die, but rather how we live. And we knew how they lived, giving themselves in service to the Lord. Will I die of cancer? Will I die of dementia? Will I die of heart problems? We can't choose. We can't choose that. We always envy those who just die in their sleep peacefully. But that often doesn't happen. Sometimes the body struggles to live over a long period of time, sometimes agonizing. We can't choose. We can choose how we live. And what a great example God's given of this godly couple to help us to know how to live in imitating Christ and imitating others that followed him. So that's the class. Anybody have any final comments? Yes, sir. Yeah, we're still being affected by them.
Yeah, and so you never know what your life, how that will affect others. You just live as you should, and that will happen.
And they probably had a great quantity of people that they affected, but sometimes if you just affect a few, the people that are right around you know you. That's what God wants from us. And bottom line, He's the only one we're concerned about helping.
Even from the
Right?
Well, Priscilla left with Paul, it seems, to go to the next destination, you know. And so it could have started right from day one, that they hit him, you know, right from that first day to make sure he got out of town, you know, the first day that they knew each other, not day.
Yeah. It may have been from the Jews in Corinth. I think the Roman authorities were easier on them there, but it had to be pretty soon because right after it wasn't long after they left Corinth with Paul that Paul wrote the letter, maybe a few years. So in that few years of time, they would have risked their neck for him. Yes? There are times in our lives that maybe just an instant where we have to make a decision. And that decision we make in that instant will affect not only our lives the rest of the way, but forever. I remember, this is kind of I was just so super shy. I did not think I would get up enough nerve to ask Beverly to go out with me. That's my wife. So I just... Will you go with me to the thing? Yeah, I'll go. Well, that changed my life. If I just stayed a chicken, somebody else might have gotten her. But that's just a slightly humorous, but also important example of a moment in life where we make the right decision that affects us the rest of our lives. I wonder how, you know, maybe Aquila and Priscilla are in there working on their tents and a little old man's work. Yeah, come on in. And they said, yeah, come on in. Who knows if it happened that way or not. But when they said, we want to be with you and help you and work with you, however that instant may have occurred, that changed their lives forever. Yes. Excellent point. And just pursuing that a little further, you can imagine as they're leaving Rome. They don't want us here. Maybe they left a good business in Rome. Why would God want this to happen? Why would God want us to lose this business? I don't know how all of this works, and I don't presume to know it. But maybe God had another idea for them in Corinth. But anyway, so when we have... And I'm not saying that God causes tragedies in our lives. I think he allows them. I think that's the best position as far as godly people are concerned. But whatever happens, if we follow him, he can turn whatever might seem to be a curse into a blessing. Let's have a word of prayer and we'll close.